Elizabeth De La Vega is a former federal prosecutor herself. She was an assistant U.S. attorney in Minneapolis, as well as a member of the Organized Crime Strike Force San Jose, California. Since her retirement in 2004, she's been a regular contributor to TomDispatch.com. And, of course, her articles have also appeared in The Nation, L.A. Times, Salon, Mother Jones. And she is not in the Witness Protection Program, at least not yet. She's also the author of United States v. Bush. Elizabeth De La Vega, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Did you hear that summary of that Post piece today?
Oh, yes. I read that earlier today.
I
agree with you. It's not so much that we have reason to be amazed anymore, but I still can feel shocked because they do continue to do these shocking things, and this is the latest. And I do think that this is one, if they haven't done it before, Congress really needs to get serious at this point because they're just being completely defiant and they have absolutely no grounds for taking this position.
They are, it sounds like they are willing to do and to say anything at this point that they need to say. And, Congress doesn't seem to get that. But Mark Rozelle called it astonishing, a breathtakingly broad view of the president's role in the system of separation of powers. Do we have anything that compares to a statement like this, as far as you know, in presidential history in regard to the executive privilege
claim? I think that during Watergate, Nixon did try to take that approach, just at least in conversations with his people internally, but they talked him out of it. It seems that every single time, and I think Patrick Leahy pointed this out, that a president has tried to take that position, there has ended up some kind of accommodation. I don't think that's going to happen in this case. And I really think that it's almost as if the Bush administration is asking to be impeached because there really is no other reasonable solution to this problem right now. It is not true that the president can instruct people in the Department of Justice not to charge his own people, especially when he's implicated in this as well. And
that is just a phony argument. In other words, the president has no right to tell a Justice Department who can and cannot be prosecuted, including himself, for anything that the prosecutor then chooses on their own to take up, correct?
Right. Well, because the prosecutor, and we've had this discussion about the U.S. attorney firings as well. The prosecutor, the U.S. attorney, is appointed by the president. But once he or she becomes the U.S. attorney, they have to be independent. And their loyalty and their oath is to the laws of the United States. So this contempt law that you alluded to before is one that's been in existence actually since 1857, and it was signed into law by a president. And so it's a statute that has to be followed. So the procedure would not be, if you want to challenge a statute, for the president just simply to say, well, you can't charge this. It's a clear abuse of power. So what happens then is that there are these different scenarios, ways that Congress can respond, and none of them is particularly good, particularly effective. But one of them is that they can, first of all, the reason this all comes up is that they would have to find someone in contempt, and that would be Harriet Myers and Joshua Bolten for not showing up.
Myers and Bolton had been subpoenaed to turn over documents and to show up and give testimony in Congress, correct?
Right. So what my approach would be if I were in Congress and or if they wanted to ask my opinion would be that they should just proceed and completely ignore what the president has said right now because he actually hasn't said it in any formal way. In fact, no one has even ascribed a name to the person who's saying it. They should proceed, find these two in contempt, and refer the matter to the D.C. U.S. attorney. At that point, if the president says to the U.S. attorney in a formal way, you can't proceed, that is a ground for impeachment.
That alone, him actually giving that edict out loud or in written terms that you cannot follow this, that would be impeachable in and of itself.
Oh, right. Especially when, I mean, and you really can't divorce any one act at this point from the whole course of conduct that we've had leading up to this, because the administration's been defying the law for years. But yes, that in and of itself, it's very similar to what was Article 3 in the impeachment articles against Nixon, which is defying congressional subpoenas.
Was that one, and that was actually, because they had passed, did they pass impeachment articles, or did he resign before they actually got to pass
them? So the House passed them.
Right.
And then he resigned.
Right.
But yes, in fact, it's interesting because it was actually this coming week, the last week in July in 1974, that, well, actually the vote was in August, but kind of things are hitting the fan in July. But the third article of impeachment specifically says that in violation of his duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, the president failed without lawful cause or excuse to produce papers and things as directed by duly authorized subpoenas issued by the Judiciary Committee. And then they list a bunch of dates. Well, this has been going on for months.
Elizabeth, that was back when we used to give a damn about the rule of law in this country and presidents. Believe it or not, George W. Bush seems to make Richard Nixon seem like a piker. We're going to take a quick break here, talk about much more on this topic for the entire hour, and our phones are wide open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I'm Brad Friedman here with Elizabeth De La Vega talking about impeachment on Impeachment Friday. Got a lot more ahead. Stay with us. Oh, man, what these guys are making us go through. A quick call from KP, who attended, who just heard John Conyers speak. KP, welcome to the PBC show.
Thank you.
What
much.
Did? Well, thank
very
you.
Exciting.
It's good to have you here. Are you K. Pete from Democratic Underground?
I am K. Pete. Uh-huh.
Good to talk to you, K. Pete. What's Conyers have to say for himself?
Well, it was. I just found out about it yesterday and came down to the Holiday Inn to hear him and wasn't sure what to expect, but he was.
Is that in D.C. or in D.C. or Michigan?
Yeah, this is San Diego.
Oh, he's in San Diego right now.
San Diego this afternoon. He came in. He was just beautiful and got goosebumps right away. The first thing he said is, before he even stopped as he was walking in the door, was what are we waiting for? Let's take these two guys out. It was just like everybody just went crazy.
That's what Conyers said? What are
That's
we waiting
Conyers
for?
Conyers said. Those are his words.
Let's take these two guys out.
Let's take these two guys out. And later on, he repeated that again and he said Cheney first. And he talked about getting out of Iraq, and he talked about it being all about the oil, that enough was enough.
Well, great, KP, but he's the president of he's the chair of the Judiciary Committee where this thing happens and
well,
where impeachment happens.
He said to be patient. He said he needed all of our help. He said he needed citizens behind him, backing him. Mm-hmm. He was very straightforward. He came in. He looked a little bit tired. He was just amazing. I know a lot about politics, but I haven't met a lot of politicians. But he just talked to everybody. He was just incredible.
Okay.
Sincere.
Thanks for checking in on that, KP. I'm only going to drop you here because we got to move on. We're almost at the top of the hour. I got to get out. Thanks for letting us know. We're going to follow up more with Conyers next week.